You're listening to the Author Stories Podcast, bringing you the story behind the stories and the storytellers.
Margaret Wise,
Terry Brooks,
Sheena Kamal,
Matthew Quick,
J.T. Ellison,
Walt D. Williams,
Brad Thor,
Corey Doctorow,
Brandon Sanderson,
Robin Mom,
Ernest Klein, Jim Butcher,
Sherilyn Harris.
Visit HankGarner.com for archives of all the shows. Today's guest is... World Anvil is a browser-based world-building platform designed for all world builders, writers and novelists, dungeon masters, game developers, and everyone else. World Anvil keeps your world settings safe and organized, helps you find your characters, locations, plots, timelines, and maps quickly and easily as you write. Then, if you choose, you can showcase your amazing world building to the world, beautifully and interactively, to keep your readers engaged. You can even use our professional tier to build your career, selling access to behind-the-scenes content your readers will love, and growing your community. Build your world setting in any genre with over 25 custom-built world-building templates, complete with prompts to inspire your creativity. Allow your readers to explore the public parts of your world in an innovative new way with interactive maps, timelines, and wiki-style articles. Give special access to co-authors, beta readers, customers, or patrons to see exclusive behind-the-scenes content. There's a free version to get started with all of the major features. Guild membership offers you a host of extra options, including comprehensive privacy settings, co-authors, presentation options, and so much more. Join our community of over 800,000 world builders, including professional authors. Take part in competitions and learn more about world building at this fantastic online community. Use the coupon code HANK to get 20% off all 6 and 12 month subscriptions. WorldAnvil.com. I'm a recent convert and I know you will be too. Well, thanks for joining me again for the Author Stories Podcast, where I bring you the story behind the stories and the storytellers. Today, I'm really excited to have Louise Fine on the show with me today. She has an amazing new book. It's called Daughter of the Reich, and this is an absolute must-have for your summer reading bookshelf and your to-be-read pile, an excellent work of historical fiction that will leave you thinking long after you finish the book. Welcome to the show, Louise.
Thank you so much, and thank you for having me on.
I'm excited to have you. Louise, we begin each show with the same question, and that question is, what is your first memory of wanting to be a writer or storyteller?
Well, my first memory is actually a really, really early one. I think I can't have been at school for very long. And one of the things we had to do was on a Monday, we had to sit and write about what we'd done at the weekend. And my weekends were always pretty dull. So I used to make up these exciting adventures that I'd had over the weekend. And I suppose really that was the first time that I enjoyed that whole exploring of the imagination and writing it down. As far as I know, my teachers never said anything. So obviously I did a fairly good job.
That's funny. Were you a bookish kid? Did you read a lot?
Yes, I read. I always had my nose in a book. My books were usually to do with ponies. And then I went into Enid Blyton, all the usual sort of kids' stories, and then moved more into the classics. I loved 19th century fiction as a teenager, just read anything I could get my hands on, really.
Do you remember the first book or writer or series that just really let you know that stories could take you to another place?
I think it had to be Enid Blyton. And I really remember my teachers being quite sniffy about Enid Blyton books, like The Famous Five. I don't know if you had them in the States, but The Famous Five and The Secret Seven just took me away to much more exciting places than than real life. And I remember, yeah, my teachers saying, you know, they weren't proper literature. but my mother said, you know what, just if you enjoy reading it, just read it, read whatever you like. And that was that, you know, I really, really think my mother had a big influence on my love of reading, because she really did just let me read whatever I like. And I think for kids, that's so important. You know, you come to better literature when you're ready for it.
Yeah. And, you know, the important thing for a kid is to read and understand the power of story. Yeah. And then, you know, we can debate all day long what is proper literature and what is not, and, you know, the merits of or whatever. But, you know, we really, especially in this day and age where we're not just competing, you know, for other types of literature, we're competing with Netflix and YouTube and all of those things for kids' attention, and or, you know, 15-second TikTok videos, for crying out loud.
I know. It's very difficult with kids these days. I mean, I have three, and my eldest two did have a gap, actually, of not really wanting to read. And I think because it becomes a bit unfashionable, they read a lot as smaller kids. And then, you know, they hit the teenage years and all the social media comes into its own. But they've come back to it. So I think the important thing is to be, you know, not force kids, but make sure it's always accessible.
Right. Exactly. Louise, your new book, here in the States, Daughter of the Reich, is obviously a work of historical fiction, which takes place during and just after World War II, which we love these stories. But your previous book, before this one that came out in the States, People Like Us, was also, was just before World War II, right?
Yeah, well, this is going to confuse you slightly, but I just need to put you straight. They're both the same book. People Like Us is the UK title. So it's exactly the same book.
Gotcha.
It's just got a different title in the States, which does confuse people.
Sure.
But two different publishers, so they have their own opinions about what the book should be called.
Of course.
The book is actually set in the 1930s. So it is it's the lead up to World War II. It finishes just before the war starts. So I really wanted to focus on the whole, how did we get there?
Right.
How did it happen?
Well, what was it that kindled your interest in this time period and the people that were involved in, you know, what would become World War II?
Yeah, so my father was a German Jew, and he left Leipzig, which is where the book is set, in 1933. He had just qualified as a lawyer, and he was on Hitler's sort of first list of people that were banned from practicing law, and he came to England as a refugee. I was actually the product of a second marriage of his. So my mother is English, and he was 61 when I was born. So he actually died when I was 17. I never got a chance to speak to him about his life in Germany before he came to the UK, and he never spoke about it. So it was always in my head that it's something I wanted to explore, something I wanted to write about, but I had no idea what form that would take. And so when I started researching, I was going to tell a story from the perspective of a Jew. But the more I researched, the more I really wanted to understand how the German people, you know, a civilized nation, could possibly have, you know, turned into this monster. So I decided to tell the story from the perspective of a young girl who grew up brainwashed into Nazism, to really get inside the head of a Nazi and try to understand. And then really, what could possibly change her? What could possibly, turn her from what was you know, accepted as what we see now as a twisted ideology, but was something that she had, you know, totally grown into and been brainwashed into. How could she possibly come out of that? And the answer really had to be love. So essentially, it's a love story, but that's the inspiration behind it.
Right. The last two, possibly 3 years, there have been so many great, so many great historical fiction books based around World War II, just leading up to it, during the war, just after the war. And some of the best books that have come out have been based around that time. And there just seems to be a resurgence of interest in this time period and the people that made up this generation. Obviously this story has a very personal connection for you, with your father. And that really shows through. But as a reading population, why do you think that we are just so hungry for stories from this time period right now?
Well, I mean, there's parallels that you can draw between between that time period and now. And I think, you know, we need to remember history if we want to avoid similar mistakes for the future. And I think it's all still very relevant. You know, the 30s was a time when we'd come out of the Great Recession, and there were new forms of media, new forms of control over the media. And yeah, I think minds are very easy to influence. And, you know, the crash of 2008 and the sort of move towards much more nationalism, much more nationalistic feeling, is quite apparent. So yeah, there are definitely parallels to be drawn and lessons hopefully to be learned.
Sure. How did you research this book? Where do you begin? And, you know, how much could you get from family sources, or, you know, how did you get so informed about the time period? So that, I mean, because this book is so immersive, it just pulls you right in like you're there. What sort of research went into it?
So I started with general reading. I read a lot around the subject, and I also tried to find anything I could get my hands on about Leipzig in particular, because that's where the whole story is set. Then I traveled there. I went there a few times, and I was accompanied by my half sister, who speaks German. I don't. And she helped me a lot, you know, with translations, because quite a few of people there still don't speak English. I met lots of experts over there. Walked around the city, saw the street where my father lived and the whole area, which is actually largely undamaged, and just got a real feeling for the place at all different times of the year. And then I, luckily enough, had access to a huge amount of family papers, which came to light sort of partway through my research period, and they actually have now been lodged at the University of Sussex in their history of Jewish history department, because they are so there's so much of them, and they ran from the period in the sort of early 1900s all the way up through to about 1960s, and you know, diaries, letters, journals, you know, a huge contemporaneous source, which was so useful because, you know, having a lot of books are written with the benefit of hindsight. And so having that immersive sort of feeling of not knowing what's going to happen was so useful for writing the book.
When, because you have been, you've worked as an attorney, I believe, and you mentioned your three children, with family life and career, When did you find time to work on the book?
Yeah, well, that was quite difficult. So the book sort of sat in my head for quite a few years. And then I was a lawyer. I went into banking and then I actually was running my own company. And one day I saw the advertisement for a master's degree in creative writing. And I just thought, I really want to do this. And I sort of went home and said to my husband, and he was like, just do it. And I was like, yes, but the time isn't right, you know. And he said, the time's never going to be right, just do it. So I put my business on hold for a year and I thought, okay, I'll do the master's, I'll get the book written, and then I'll go back to work. Well, of course, that didn't quite work out like that. And the book took a few years rather than the one to write. But the whole process of the master's was quite helpful, and I didn't go back to my job. Fortunately, I got an amazing book deal, and now I write full time in and around family life. But yeah, it's really hard to juggle work and writing and a family. So it did have to go on the back burner for a while, but we got there in the end.
When you started, after you'd finished the novel and you started shopping it around, what were some of the reactions that you got from agents or publishers? Was there a warm reception for this type of book? Did the subject matter scare anyone away?
Yeah, I think it did, because, you know, the sort of World War II market is quite crowded. There's a lot of books, as you mentioned, out there. And I think it took me a while to get an agent, I think, because they saw, you know, as soon as they saw the subject matter, they didn't even bother to read it, really. But fortunately, the agent that I have, I actually sent it to her on a Friday, and on the Saturday she came straight back to me and said she was loving it.
That's amazing.
I think when people actually read it, they realized it was kind of a different take on the subject. So if you're going to write about something which has been really well covered, it needs to have a different perspective, or it has to bring something new to it. And I think because this is told from the perspective of a Nazi rather than a victim, it gave a new twist to the story.
Well, and new twist it definitely is. And, you know, I've been looking for a book like this for so long, something that would give us the perspective of someone who was duped into going along with the tragedies that were going on. Like, and Hetty is a perfect character. She's just in part of the machine without even really having an opinion about it. She's just going along. And what was it like writing from her perspective? And what sort of things did you do to prepare to write a character like her?
Yeah, well, I read Mein Kampf, which I had put off and dreaded for a long time, but I felt I really had to read it. And the more I read it, actually, the more I thought, how did people get duped by this? Because it was so outrageous and so, yeah, just like the rantings of a madman, that it's still very difficult to believe. But then that happens today. I mean, you know, we have all the extremism and people being brainwashed all the time. So I suppose being a young person made it easier because, you know, they're innocent and they're, you know, we kind of brainwash our children all the time, don't we? We tell them stuff and they believe us, and they're almost programmed to believe in the stories that are around them. And I suppose I just put myself into the shoes of somebody young and innocent and surrounded by people telling her over and over the same story. And yeah, it was quite easy to believe that. She came as a really fully formed person in my head.
As you're writing the book, did you have any beta readers or family or friends who you bounced some of the ideas off of, or, you know, got input as you were writing the book?
I did. I had a lot of beta readers for me. So I used my family and then some friends, big readers, and also my tutors on my course. They didn't read all of it. That it was, you know, very early version. And in fact, halfway through the master's program, I stopped the draft I was writing, restarted telling it in a really different way from their feedback. So I think that feedback, that perspective of being away from the book is so important when you're, you know, a beginner writer trying to find your way, because you get so involved in the story and the day-to-day writing that it's hard to get a perspective on it.
When, as you were, writing the book, did you use, an outline, or did you know where the story was going to go in the end? I knew that you started with kind of the big concepts of it. But was there anything along the way that surprised you in twists and turns that the book took?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I am not a planner. This is are you a plotter or a pantser? I'm definitely not so much a plotter. I mean, I had the story actually never changed, but a lot of the detail did. So some of the characters really surprised me in the way they turned out, and storylines just kind of popped up that I didn't know were going to be in there. And I mean, I'm writing my second novel now, and I actually love that freedom of writing the first draft, having a vague idea. So I kind of know the beginning and the end of the book and a vague idea of the middle, but I like that freedom of sitting down and just seeing where it goes. It may not be the most efficient way to write, but for me, it works because you have that freedom to find new voices or for characters to just do their thing. And then once you have that maybe not very good first draft, you can then shape it and make it better. But for me, that's the way it just has to be.
Louise, you have a fantastic blog at your website where
Thank you.
You have a collection of blog post essays that are fantastic. But you wrote one a while back called "A Writer's Life is a Lonely Life," or yeah. Or is it? And you talk about, you know, the transition from you know a going to work person to you know a writer who's completely independent. And what were some of the biggest challenges that you you know saw when you started writing this book and really pursuing it full time? And what are some things that you learned that help you over those hurdles?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really strange thing, writing a book compared to having a normal job. I think because you never really, I mean, I did show my work to other people, but only, you know, a long time after I'd sort of started working on it. And I think one of the challenges is not really knowing if what you're writing is any good or not. I mean, one day I'd read what I'd written and I think, you know, this is amazing. And then the next day I'd read the same thing and think, this is absolutely terrible. and so I think that is one of the hard things, is to keep going even when you think what you're doing is not that good. You know, no writer can write a brilliant first draft, and no writer can sort of, I think when you read other people's books, you are seeing a finished product, and it's hard to compare your sort of first attempt against other people's finished products that's been through lots of editing and lots of, you know, other people. So I think that's what you have to bear in mind all the time when you're starting out, and it doesn't seem to be going that well.
What Daughter of the Reich, or People Like Us, if you're outside the U.S., are available everywhere now. They launched just a couple of days ago. We're excited for that. Louise, there are links to the books in the show notes where people can find it. If people want to dig into all the great stuff that you do, where can they find you online?
Yeah, so I have a website, which is www.louisefine.com. I'm on Twitter under Fine Louise, and I'm on Instagram, Facebook. I've got a Facebook author page as well, so I'm kind of easily accessible online. So and yeah, do get in touch. I'm happy to answer any questions, happy to try and support other authors. So yeah, lovely to hear from readers as well.
Excellent. We'll put links to all of that great stuff in the show notes of this episode. Louise, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy launch schedule to share some time with us on the show.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's been a real pleasure.
Authors, I have a fantastic new service to tell you about. It's called PubSite. PubSite is a service to help you build your very own website, your home on the web, where you can promote your work and give your fans a place to connect with you. PubSite is a website platform that allows every author, regardless of budget, to have a great-looking professional website. Developed by the book marketing professionals at FSB Associates, PubSite is the new easy-to-use DIY website builder developed specifically for books and authors. Whether you're an author of one book or 20, or a small publisher, PubSite allows you to build, design, and most importantly, update your website pain-free. No need to be dependent on a designer or webmaster to make a small but costly change to your website. Save the money and do it yourself. PubSite is the best platform for authors because it's a book-centric platform. PubSite was built just for authors and small publishers. Every design, feature, and layout is book-centric. They have customized designs for you to use. It's easy to build. No coding or HTML is necessary to create a stunning, professional-looking website with all the features you want. Get a custom domain name, yourname.com. It's simple to update. You can add all of your books, add a blog and a book tour, sell from any retailer, manage your email list and social media, and even do e-commerce. Build your website with a 14-day free trial, then pay just $19.99 per month, which includes hosting. And we offer packages starting at $499 to set up the website for you. Pub-site.com, the place to help authors find their home on the web.